babies wake at night for a reason. And when I was so convicted of that, I decided I was going to take my podcast to a new level. I made this whole series on what's wrong with sleep training. And I mean, like, traditional Ferber cried out. And I interviewed all these different experts. And it was a learning journey for me because, oh, they're awesome, awesome people. And yeah, just over time, I've become more and more committed to making sure that I'm an advocate for children's needs and that we never disconnect, that we never put the relationship aside, even for sleep. I would much rather teach people how to get the support they need, you know, gather community. I don't know how, sometimes it's hard to come up with the money, but dang, crowdsource. Just do what you can to prioritize the support for yourself and your needs rather than sacrificing your child's well-being.
Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of thriving through pregnancy, birth, and beyond. If you aspire towards exceptional parenthood and are looking to navigate the joys and challenges of raising children in our fast-paced world, you've found your tribe. I'm Philippa Scott and
I'm Philippa Cox. Together we're Philippa Squared, unpacking the real talk on modern parenting, peeling back the layers of its complexity from pregnancy and birth to the adventures beyond. This podcast is your guide to unraveling the nuances of parenting in today's world.
And we're keeping it real, sharing stories and having conversations with insightful guests, giving you clarity and direction on your parenting journey.
This is where your adventure begins, transforming the challenge into a journey of wonder and joy, where you discover ways to craft your own parenthood map, not just follow the one handed down to you.
So settle in, get comfy, and let's laugh, learn, and grow into the parent you aspire to be. Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design.
Hello and welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design. You are joining myself, Philippa Scott, and my beautiful co-host, Pippa Cox. Pippa, hello.
Hello, Philippa. Now, who do we have today to talk to? We've got someone really special, don't we, Philippa?
Oh, well, she's very special to me. Her name is Meredith Bruff, and she is a sleep coach, but she's not just a sleep coach. She's my sleep coaching trainer. Which makes her very special because I have very high standards about who I train with. So I'm super stoked to have you here, Meredith. Please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be where you are and what you're doing.
Sure. So first and foremost, I'm a mama. I'm a wife. You know, I have five kids and I don't take so much credit for that some days when four out of five are adults, right? But as you may know, it does not get that much easier even when they're out of the house. There's still lots of momming involved, but they're my pride and joy. I love my kiddos. And I did everything I could to stay home with my kids when they were young. So I ran a daycare, loved babies, loved children. And that was how I started honing my sleep coaching skills. But I don't know what you would call it. Probably more sleep shaping, as they say, for, you know, young babies, because I wasn't teaching mamas. I was watching kiddos and I was helping them develop, you know, natural habits, naturally good sleep habits as a gift to their parents and also a gift to myself because it made my life easier as well. And I had read one book basically when my second child, when I was pregnant with her, I was kind of terrified about sleep and what was coming. And a friend recommended BabyWise. And I skimmed through it and I used the holistic principles and I stayed in tune with myself when it came to everything else. But, you know, just the, you know, a little bit on the scheduling and the routines and this and that. And I had easygoing kiddos and it worked really well. And so this is where I just kept helping people that came through my daycare. And I definitely didn't take it seriously. I thought it was just a hobby. And a fun thing, because it would only be a couple of weeks in my house and these little ones would be sleeping really well and their parents would be so happy. And then I'd watch them for a couple of years. So it's not like I was doing this every week, you know? Anyways, at some point in my story, 15 years, 17 years in, a woman was trying to take care of her little twins and some older kiddos, and she had never raised kids on her own. She'd lost her village. She'd moved away. Even her boyfriend walked out on her, and I just kind of came in to help for a day, and I just assessed these little ones, and I saw that they were lethargic, barely eating, barely sleeping. I was there all day into the night, and I was very concerned. And then the mom confessed to me how she did not know how she was going to go another day, didn't know if she could keep her babies. And so I just did my thing. And that was when my eyes were open to my ability and my gift, because it was so life-changing. I helped this family stay together by helping these little girls sleep well. I'm sorry, that's such a long story for an intro. But you asked a loaded question. It was just my wake-up call to, oh, you know what? This isn't just a hobby. This isn't just a fun thing. This is actually really important, and I really want to help moms love motherhood as much as I did and enjoy it as much as I did and avoid the misery. And I didn't even realize at the time how much, you know, sleep impacts our mental health and postpartum conditions, and it's everything. But yeah, that was a long time ago. So that was 7.5 years ago. But that was the start of my journey to where I'm at now.
Amazing. Look, I want to share, I guess, with the audience why you, because that's actually really important to me. It's part of the reason we've had you on the podcast, is because, you know, I have been anti-sleep consultants for a very long time because it just, and yet at the same time, I've been looking for something to be able to help, right? I was pretty lucky. My kids all slept reasonably well. I felt like I don't know whether I just like you knew and could feel into it in a different way, but I just went with my intuition. But there are families out there who really struggle with that. And so on one side, I'm like, I want to help these families to be able to get the sleep that they all need. But on the other side, I'm like, I don't believe in being rigid, and I don't believe in crying it out, and I don't believe in you know, causing harm for the sake of sleep. So, you know, finding this happy balance between following your gut and intuition and being a really responsive parent and meeting your child's emotional and physical needs, and at the same time getting some sleep, because being exhausted is not fun. So, yeah, so, and that's what, and I found you on another podcast I was listening to. I'm like, man, I got to find out more about this woman. So, and immediately I knew that that was a good fit, that you were somebody I wanted to learn from. So tell people, I guess, a bit about your approach and why, you know, what's important to you? What are the foundations of your practice, I guess? Because I've listened to lots of your podcast episodes and I just love your ethos around it all. Can you share that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for asking. Oh boy. You know, I just want to just put it out there that, you know, we grow in our profession. We change, you know, we might start out in one place and be in a completely different place later. And so I look back at my story as this evolution. You know, in the beginning, I had read this one book and that was kind of my background. I read a few other books before I started my business, and I just had a natural talent. So I really wasn't worried about a sleep consultant training. I actually didn't know they existed. When I started my business, I thought I was creating something. And even though I'm reading these books, it doesn't occur to me. Anyways, I had already developed my own way. And so it was really just eating up more information and becoming more well-rounded. But as I was supporting families, I always had a really gentle, loving approach. I never wanted babies to cry. I never wanted them to feel abandoned or get very worked up. So that just never was part of the story or the picture. And I taught moms how to, like, listen to their intuition, their instincts, to stay in tune and connected, even from the beginning. And then as I moved into supporting families all over the world, which also happened organically because I helped an Instagram influencer who opened the door to, you know, just more variety and bigger challenges, I just started seeing that a lot of the simple fixes weren't fixes. It was like exhausting work trying to figure out how to help these families. And that went on for a few years. And during this period of time, listening to my intuition, studying and researching temperament, finding people that I really admired and you know, I probably moved away a little bit from, like, I really appreciated what Dr. Sears taught about attachment parenting and sensitivity and high needs kids and stuff like that. But anyways, this experience of trying different things helped me create my own approach. And I just have a little side note that I believe God was helping me all along the way. So I don't feel like I'm this genius person that did it on my own. I had God helping me. I had a really determined spirit and I was very dedicated to helping people, very creative. And then the parents were just awesome at trusting me and following my advice and trying different things and sharing what they learned. And so together we created this approach that I call baby-centered sleep. And that took a long time to figure out my name for my approach because I kept trying different things. I wanted something to really fit what I believe in and the passion that I feel for protecting babies and their needs and putting them at the heart of everything. Even though I know a lot of people out there will focus on this balance of, you know, mom has needs, babies have needs, we need to balance the family's needs. I just feel so freaking protective of babies and children. And the fact that no, there are very few people, especially in my field, that do feel that way. And I've just seen too much, which is something we talked about before you started recording. I've seen too much. Babies wake at night for a reason. And when I was so convicted of that, I decided I was going to take my podcast to a new level. I made this whole series on what's wrong with sleep training. And I mean, like, traditional Ferber cried out. And I interviewed all these different experts, and it was a learning journey for me because, oh, they're awesome, awesome people. And just over time, I've become more and more committed to making sure that I'm an advocate for children's needs and that we never disconnect, that we never put the relationship aside, even for sleep. I would much rather teach people how to get the support they need, you know, gather community. I don't know how, sometimes it's hard to come up with the money, but dang, crowdsource. Just do what you can to prioritize the support for yourself and your needs rather than sacrificing your child's well-being. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of need to mesh this together so people understand easygoing kids aren't the ones I'm worried about because they'll cry for a couple of minutes and then be great sleepers. So I think that's why Cry It Out and Ferber are still practiced and people stand behind it. But these other children who are very, very sensitive, very attached, they just need more from their parents. And they need everything more. Like, they need more reassurance. They need more security. They need more co-regulation. They're not the ones that we want to shut the door and walk away from. It is harmful for them. And so they're the ones who sleep the worst. And they're the ones whose parents get the most desperate. So it's actually really tragic in our society because I'm sure there's lasting effect and there's just not studies on it. And so we just have to listen to our heart and what feels right and kind of for sure keep up with science. I think we're ahead of science and it's keeping up with us because we're following our instincts and intuition, and later science backs what we're doing with my methodology.
Yeah, beautiful. I actually just answered a message this morning of a young mom on Facebook. She had a 10-week-old baby who had started waking through the night and wanted to feed more. And I said to her, that is so normal. We talk about it being a sleep regression around that 4-month mark, right? But it's not. Actually, baby might have been a bit older, but it was close to the 4-month mark. So, you know, your baby just wants to feed more because he's more active through the day and he wants to learn more through the day. And so he hasn't got time for feeding. He's got time for feeding, but he still needs all his calories. So meet that need and see it as the progression that it is rather than the sleep regression. I know we talk about, and I've talked to you about this before, I just hate that term because it makes it seem so negative when in fact, yes, it impacts your sleep of a nighttime, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. The other thing that I really wanted to pick up on what you're saying there is it's about the village, isn't it, Pippa? We talk about this all the time. We were never meant to do this alone. And when I think about even just me as a grandmother being able to, you know, when my daughter is exhausted, but the baby's not sleeping, or the baby's had a decent sleep, but she hasn't for whatever reason, I can, you know, just have the baby for a bit and let her sleep, you know, take the baby to the park or bring the baby upstairs. But it then means that she can catch up, which means she's not overexhausted and overextended. And that's what having that village really does, right? It actually, and it's the missing piece, because we can very often meet the needs of our children through the night and be okay if there's somebody supporting us to parent the baby, right? And we can do that without impacting attachments, because our child can be attached to more than one person. Yes, they'll have their primary, but they can have other attachments where they're perfectly fine for a couple of hours.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I really focus on in working with parents, is helping them understand how their children develop and what they need to thrive, and how the parents meet that need, how the parents influence their child's development. And I think I'm just on a mission to help parents understand that it's worth anything. Like, all the sacrifices you could ever imagine are worth it to help your child thrive and to be healthy mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, intellectually, all the things. So what's interesting, though, about my story, which I kind of alluded part of your question, is that I believe in fostering independence. I don't think that we have to just wait it out like some holistic sleep, what do you call it? I don't like to say sleep trainers, but anyways, some philosophies about working to improve sleep are just about co-sleeping and just waiting, where I feel and I've experienced that we can foster independence, but it's not at the top of my priority list. It's kind of in the middle or the bottom, because a lot of the responsive parenting and the being there and the co-regulation and all of the principles that create that secure attachment actually foster independence naturally in time, you know? And so there's a reason I have a job. People are exhausted and they need the help. And over the years, I've created several methods for helping little ones sleep as well as possible, as soon as possible. So that's pretty generic or general, but it's that I have sleep methods. I have some independent sleep methods, but they're always responsive and loving, and they're geared towards different temperaments. And some of the temperaments, like being very sensitive or very active, those kiddos, you actually want to avoid crying, like none. You want to be subtle. You want to be sneaky. You want to make changes very, very carefully and slowly. And then there's the other ones where, you know, you can move things along a little quicker and they respond well. And so we can have a different approach with them. But my passion is really those sensitive and spirited kiddos, the high needs ones who need a completely different approach. I kind of leave the other babies to other people, because other sleep consultants can help them and it's fine. But these other families really need me and what I teach.
Yeah, beautiful. So what would you like, you know, we're obviously talking to mums and dads out there about sleep, and you work from, and obviously the people that you teach tend to work from birth through to about 6 years old, right? Yeah. So, and I totally, like, the research all says that the closer your attachment, the more likely your children are to step out into their independence and autonomy. And I think there's a difference between independence and autonomy, you know, this idea that I can reach out knowing that I can come back and that it's safe to do so, creates kids who are willing to try things and fail and so on. And a lot of that comes back to how parents behave around their children, how parents behave towards themselves, all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, it comes back to us. But how do you, I guess, I mean, there's some of your premises that I love, but could you expand on maybe a couple of the things that you feel really impact parents, just in terms of how they think about sleep and how they think about maybe introducing new ideas around sleep?
That's a big question. So, well, like I said, I like to help parents understand what normal expectations are. And so, you know, the sleep training world has moved far away from lactation being natural. You know, they're wanting to program that and to eliminate it at night. And so I'm just often moving parents back to what's natural and what feels right and what's instinctive, and helping them understand that all of those ideas that come naturally to them are right and good. And so I'm always, I guess, reprogramming their brains, like trying to let's move all this clutter out of the sleep training rules and let's be a lot more in tune with ourselves and with the child's needs. So I just spent a lot of time on that first. And then, gosh, my brain has already forgotten what you asked me.
I'll give you a bit of an idea. So one of the things I love about your approach is that it's about going back to what works. You know, when you, so introducing new things, but going back to what works is, I think, is the thing I learned from you.
Okay.
So talk to us about that.
Okay. Yeah. So when it comes to the actual sleep methodology, what's different is, I mean, for one thing, because of my experience in my daycare, I found that we could just work on naps and bedtime and not even do anything at night because I wasn't teaching these parents. I was just helping these kiddos become more regulated and not stay awake too long. And I was helping them fall asleep in a crib with my assistance very slowly and carefully, and then sleep just improved. So that's very different. Especially with the sensitive kiddos, I like to introduce a sleep method and just, hey, this is new to your routine. We're going to do this today. It's not going to work at all. It's not meant to. It's like a minute change in your life, and or maybe five, whatever. And then we just put baby to sleep the way they're used to. And that's got to sound so weird to all the traditional sleep consultants out there because it's not consistent. And so what I teach my students is when it comes to sensitive babies, consistency is great in some areas. In other areas, it's bad. Because if you push a sensitive baby too hard, they get overstimulated. They're upset. They're not going to sleep. And what happens when babies don't sleep? It's a bad cycle. We want to avoid the overtiredness and the overstimulation and, you know, all the stress and all that. So you don't get anywhere that way. So that's really one of the biggest problems with these different temperaments is people push them too hard and they just don't get. These little ones need to feel so secure and safe in your arms that when you introduce change, it has to come very slowly. And so, for example, I like to share my version of the pick up, put down method, which not everybody knows. But basically, it seems pretty intuitive. If a baby cries in a crib, you pick them up and calm them. But the lady who created this method, Tracy Hogg, her idea was you just keep doing that over and over until the baby goes to sleep. And a sensitive baby is going to be fussy and crying when they're tired. So if you can imagine, if you keep laying them down and they're used to being breastfed to sleep or held in your arms to sleep, and that baby's probably just going to fall asleep because they're in freeze mode, which isn't healthy. You know, that's the nervous system just giving up. So that's not a win. And in the Secrets of the Baby Whisper, where you read about this method, she brags that it took like 210 times or 160 or whatever. But the number keeps going down. And she does this all through the night, all the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And this is just until baby figures it out, and then eventually will only take, you know, two or three or four times after days. Well, it doesn't work on these other kiddos. It works for a very easygoing kid because they're not stressed out. You know, if it took 150 times, that's probably not one of the easygoing kids. But anyways, my way of handling this would be that, first of all, the child's very comfortable and familiar in the room in their crib. This is not a new space. Okay. And then second, it would be that we would let the child lay in the crib for a little bit before they're real tired. And then when they start to get a little fussy, we pick them up and we settle them. And guess what? We go sit down and feed them. That was enough. Or hold them to sleep. The next day, maybe we do the same thing because this is a new thing for this child. Day after, maybe you can push them a little more. So you pick them up and you comfort them and you lay them down and see how it goes. Settle for a couple minutes. If it's going great, you still need to stop, pick up baby and go sit down and feed. That was enough. So it's just it's an intuitive method because you can really just follow your heart and keep trying. And a lot of times what happens is babies, you know, maybe a weekend, maybe 2 weeks. Hey, it's worth it. The baby will just settle down in their cribs much easier with your assistance. I always say independence is the last goal. If a child has not fallen asleep in a crib, that's a huge win if you can get to that point. And independence isn't always a must in the first place. Some kids will just sleep better once they know how to fall asleep in their crib because that's so new and it can be empowering for them. But other kiddos you know, if we feel like it's going to help, then parents will just find a really loving way to make some exits. Baby will fall asleep waiting for them to return. So it's all about trust too. You don't just stay away. It's a walk to the door and back and a really gradual buildup of how long you're away if you're going to work on that type of thing. Or even the chair method. I'm okay with the sitting and moving gradually away, but I'm not okay with we're going to just follow these rules no matter what. You know, if your child needs to be comforted or you need to hold their hand or you need to stop the method, then you do.
Yeah. I love that approach because it really says, it says sleep's important, so we're going to get sleep and we'll do it in whatever way works. But it says we can introduce new ideas, but just do it gently and safely and be responsive, be watching, be curious about what happens when you do those things so that, you know, you've got this beautiful experience. Because I didn't like the cried out method, I really didn't read many books around sleep when my kids were little. I just co-slept. And my last baby only moved out of my bed 2 years ago at 12, but that was permanently. She would go and sleep in her own bed and then she might come in at 2 a.m. when she wanted a cuddle or whatever. But I actually moved my children into bed with each other after they got out of my bed. So they wouldn't necessarily need to be in bed with me all the time, but they'd sleep together because 200 or 300 years ago, that's what they would have done. Everybody just curled up in a pile on the floor or in the bed all together. And nobody slept alone. You know, they were all even in the same room,
yeah,
even if they were in independent beds. And so, you know, we need to think about it from a biological perspective as well, about what does that look like? And it wasn't until I happened to come across something, because my children are all neurodivergent, they're four autistic children. And so one of the things I was learning about when it came to sleep, because, you know, they're teens now, and when they did start sleeping alone independently, which was their chosen desire at that point, at 12, they're like, yeah, I'm going to do this by myself. But they stopped sleeping well. And so they'd been great sleepers up until then. And then they stopped sleeping well. And I thought, you know, I've got to want to figure out why. And I did some research and I looked into oxytocin and sleep. And oxytocin is released when we're feeling held and cuddled and bonded and all of those things. And oxytocin helps with sleep. So, you know, all this biology actually has an impact. And so, you know, my children went from, you know, those who are older, so my oldest sleeps with her baby, so she's getting oxytocin all the time. They sleep great. My next one, she has a boyfriend, so she sleeps great because she's got somebody to cuddle up with her, right? So my children who are co-sleeping with their partners or their own children, they sleep great. My 14-year-old, she's on her own. She's not so great, although she does invite the dog in every now and again. One of the cats. But we can't remember that there's a biology in here, right?
Right.
And it's about all that.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, when I started my business, I was all about the SIDS sleep rules, and I was very rigid in the way babies need to sleep on their backs in their own bed and this and that. But it didn't take me long, maybe like a year of just meeting people from other countries and having my mind open to, look, we're doing this in our country. It's actually safe. So, you know, what's going on in your country, right? And I am a firm believer in bed sharing. I think it's co-sleeping is just being in the same room, bed sharing in the same bed. I think it's important, especially when someone feels intuitively led to do that. I think they must, because there's a need that they're filling. And I've seen it over and over. These little kids who just thrive from that. I've given so many moms credit and permission to bed share because they feel like it's wrong. They're shamed by the doctor. They're shamed by society in America, especially. And it's really just political. And it's, I don't know. I think you have to look at it in the middle and be like, but look at the La Leche League. They're extremely science-based and intelligent, knowledgeable. They're just as strong of a what do you call it, organization as the, is it the EAP or the AAP? I don't remember. American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP. And I would never throw out their advice. And they teach about the Safe Sleep 7. That is important. You want to make sure that there isn't bedding and that baby, you're sleeping in the right position. And also James McKenna, he's a doctor that I really love learning from. He teaches about how important it is for you to assess the risk before you do anything. Well, SIDS rules don't protect babies 100%. The Safe Sleep 7 is the safest way to co-sleep or bed share. The SIDS recommendations is the safest way for a child to sleep in their crib. But none of that's really foolproof. But if you are a breastfeeding mother, science shows that it can be very, very safe when you follow the Safe Sleep 7. And so what you are assessing is, what would I do? Would I be okay if something happens if I bring baby into my bed? And then you go into that. You made a decision and you're okay with it. And that's that. It doesn't matter what anyone else says. It's your decision. And most likely your child needs it. Your child's going to thrive from it.
Yeah.
It's just not a good fit for all parents. Not all moms are comfortable. They're not all relaxed. They can't sleep well. Sometimes the child is just terrible to sleep next to. So, you know, there's people who still come to us and want those changes. But I love what you shared in the beginning, because that is a real solution. If you want your child out of your bed, then hopefully there's another child that they can share with. Just don't do it while they're babies, when they're a little older.
Yeah.
Because they can't, it's not always safe for like a baby and a child to sleep together. So, yeah, like that's a perfect solution. I've tried to help a woman before who, she was just such a softy. She loved her little one. She loved co-sleeping. Dad was on the couch. That was a problem. She kept trying over and over to get him out of her bed. And he just, I think they were like two magnets. Like they were just meant to sleep in the same bed in each other's arms. And eventually she got bold and brave enough to put him with his brother. And that was the perfect cure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love absolutely. That. I love that you've done that.
Yeah, I have a couple of clients that I work with who've moved their children into the same beds, and they've or at least even to two side by side singles,
yep.
So that they can hold hands or something and be connected
or skip beds.
Yes, up beds. Yes. Yeah, it's not always as easy to get them to sleep at night if they're going at the same time.
They said hot beds. I made you think of jumping, but I meant like actually like. All right, I'm not sleeping. I'm going to join you. But yeah, sometimes fun too.
Yeah, that's right. And it's one of those things. I think I love what you said about sort of, you know, rewriting the rules and thinking about our intuition around the rules and what's expected and how we do all of that. And I think we get very caught up in what it's supposed to look like or what the book says it's supposed to look like. When I used to have these dreams when I was about 5 months pregnant with my first, I kept having this awful dream that I was bringing home a 6-month-old from the hospital that I'd never bathed, fed, changed their clothes or nappy, like nothing. And I was like, I think I better do some learning about how to look after a baby, right? And as soon as I read this, I was reading this book and the dreams went away. So clearly it was my subconscious saying to me, you know, you might be reading about the birth, but you need to read about how to look after a baby because there's some other things here. And the book that I chose to read had lots of examples of different ideas. And I loved that it had the, you know, the breastfeeding idea, the bottle feeding idea. Now here's what you need to make your own choice. And it talked about co-sleeping and you know, cot sleeping and all of these different things. It gave lots of examples so that you could really follow your intuition and look at all of that stuff and what works for you. Here's a story from somebody who does it this way. And here's a story from somebody who does it this way. It was fabulous. And it went right through 5 years old. But it's a great way to think about your parenting because no one size fits all. No one size fits all for each child either, right? So you can have lots of children like you and I do and find that, you know, it doesn't always work for everyone. And so you're going to have to adapt and adjust. And the rules are made to be broken. And if anybody's going to teach you that, it's a child, right? So just thinking about that. But, you know, sleep is a major, major issue for parents. I remember being so my husband used to get up for work about 3 a.m. and he would work all day and then he'd come home. He was usually home by sort of school. End of school day. So he'd be home around 3. And so I did all nights. If somebody woke through the nights, that was my job because he was out of the house working. And it wasn't so much that we decided that that was just our you know, gendered roles. It was because of his need to be out and able to do that. So the only time I ever woke him up in the night was if there was vomit. And we would share that job because one would do the beds and whatever and the other would do the job.
You're lucky.
I didn't have help with that. You're lucky.
No, that was not in question. I didn't care what his thoughts were. You can't do both at the same time. So yes, we would do it that way. And I guess for me, I just kind of accepted that was my lot. That was how it was going. And I want to just touch back on something you talked about before, that idea that we, you know, the baby at all costs and keeping that connection secure at all costs, because it does bring with it a certain amount of pressure. And it brings with it a huge amount of feeling like when we do try and put our needs somewhere in that package, we're failing or we're letting our baby down. And then what we get is people who are so strung out and so tired that they're actually letting they're letting everyone down, including their baby, because they put their own needs so low. So, I mean, I have ideas about this, but, you know, for you, in fitting sleep in with that, what would you suggest?
Right. It is such a problem the way women, like, here we are being so giving and generous and wonderful. But why is it that we completely forget ourselves when we become mothers? I don't know why that happens. It's a real problem. So I totally get what you're saying, because it's taken to such an extreme that this is probably the main reason why women get so sleep deprived or so strung out or so stressed out or so deprived that they're, you know, and I was about to say to develop postpartum depression or anxiety. That's not always the case. Like sometimes we have all the factors that create that situation, but there are ways to prevent it or to, you know, make your situation better so that you're less at risk. Right. So yeah. And then some women will wear their sacrifice as a badge of honor. Like, I didn't sleep for 4 years. I was up every night, all night, and I'm proud of it, you know? And so it's interesting, this problem of women needing to take care of themselves but not thinking that they should. So yeah, I'm glad you asked me that, because I actually just was talking to one of my past clients this morning, and she has been so patient. Her little one, he's two. He has been waking for 3 or 4 hours at night for 3 months. And since she's my friend, you know, I've given her advice and she's asked me all the questions. And so we know that there's nothing she's actually done to create the situation. We've gone through all of the scenarios. I know her son's very sensitive, and the most sensitive and spirited kiddos have these wakeful periods at night. That's how overstimulated and wired and uncomfortable they are from the development. And these kids are so smart that they're learning words in their sleep. Like, they're waking up with new vocabulary. They're amazing. And they are the exception. So these are kids that I've seen, like, I could probably count, you know, with both hands, how many kids I've known that are this extreme when it comes to these 2, 3, 4 hour wakings from development. She's been so patient. And she's probably my best student ever, like, client-wise, who, you know, my voice is in her head as she's mothering. And she sends me texts all the time. Meredith, I know that he needs me. I hear your voice telling me that at night. I've been there for him. And so the last night or two, she texted me and says, I need a support system right now. I'm at the time checkpoint. I'm really, really strung out and I'm so exhausted. I can't do this anymore. My husband's gone right now. And I said, okay, stop. I have this time check method that's still intuitive and loving. And because she's been already implementing all the things I taught her, this could be one of those times where we want to set up some boundaries and help baby become a little bit more independent to, you know, because of her situation and her condition. This is definitely a very, very, very last resort. But also, like I said, this is loving and still connected and intuitive. And we're talking about, like, just pushing a little bit, you know, like, let's get baby to just wait for me for a few minutes instead of me rushing or me always being there at his side. And it's such a process of listening to instincts and, you know, fine tuning this to a child. But this woman, she knows everything I've ever taught, right? So I don't even have to teach. I just had to step in and say, you are completely depleted. This is not bad. He's two. He's been a strong sleeper in the past. I think he's just gotten used to a lot of things because they're driving him. They're having little mini parties at night. This is a time to really like set a boundary and teach. And so we talked about how she's got to talk about the expectations for him to go back to sleep or to stay in his bed or whatever it is. Talk about that during the day. Lots and lots of love and cuddle. And I told her, it's not the crying that's the crime. It really isn't. It's pushing too hard. It's over stressing or over, you know, pushing. It's the isolation. It's the not being there. Those are all the problems. And so what matters when you're setting a boundary is that you're there and that you're comforting your child. Just like if they're having a tantrum and they're seeking your contact and your presence, right? This is a beautiful thing. So you're there and you're helping him. You're not leaving him alone. You're right outside the door, whatever it is. You're using your voice on the monitor. You're standing in the room holding him in his cot or his bed while he's being cuddled and loved on. Or maybe you're laying there trying to get him in his cot out of your bed. Whatever it is, it's the support and the responsive parenting that matters. And so when you're at that point of distress or just losing it or feeling like you can't even go on another day, I don't want parents to be hypersensitive about crying. It's not the crying that's a problem, because that's a normal emotion. It's how we express ourselves. Little ones do it even more. It's just that they really need your support and they need your comfort. And anything you can do to baby step into or prepare them is going to be better. But when it comes to your boundaries with your body, maybe it's weaning at 18 months or 2 years. That's okay. It's okay. It's your body. You're allowed to set that boundary, you know? And for her, it was, I need to set this boundary because I can't do this. And I've got another child to raise. And so she's only on day two of trying to work through it. But, you know, I'm just there to hold her hand and tell her to listen to her heart and her intuition, to not disconnect, to, you know, in the softest, gentlest way, just push him a little bit. And I know it's gonna work. It's the right time. He's old enough. He understands. No, I hope that's not uncomfortable for you guys.
No. But that's about the aware parenting stuff, right? That's about digging into being aware and being okay with their emotions, but still setting boundaries. I think there's a lot of confusion about gentle parenting and permissive parenting, right? Because it's not about being permissive. It's about being gentle in our approach. But that doesn't mean that they get to just do anything. When Paisley goes to sleep with me, my granddaughter, we only have to lay our heads down on the bed and she starts crying, right? Mm-hmm. Why is she crying? She's crying because she's got FOMO and she's angry. She doesn't want to go to bed. She's tired and I know she needs to have a sleep right now. So we will lay on the bed and I hold her and I sing to her and I cuddle her and I put the music on, and 3 minutes later she's fast asleep. Has she cried to sleep? Yes. Is she alone? No. And she's not distressed. She's angry. Right. And I can tell the difference. And it's okay for her to be angry. And I tell her that. I say to her, I know you're angry because it's time for sleep, but that's okay. I'm here with you. And I've got you and you're okay. And I just keep talking to her, and when there's a moment when talking is done, and that's okay. And then off she goes to sleep. And a couple of minutes later, when that sweet spot hits between 3 and 5 minutes, I'll extricate my arm from under her head. And put the pillows up and leave her for her nap. Now, I don't have a problem with her crying. I have a problem with her being alone, crying in distress, crying because you're angry. That's okay. Like, she's got to feel all of those emotions. And we don't, as mothers, I think there's an expectation that our kids have to be happy all the time. And it's our job to make them happy all the time. Well, they're not going to be happy all the time.
We can have another episode of that.
We are, right? Like, so... You know, letting go of those things as well and really understanding. And I think a big part of that is that if we as parents, and it's interesting because one of my previous clients, we did some trauma work, and then she discovered the aware parenting method. And she said, you know, it came into my life at the perfect moment, because before I did this work with you before we'd done TRTP. She said, I wouldn't have been ready. I wouldn't have been able to sit with my daughter's emotions. Now,
that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. Now she said, now I can sit with my daughter's emotions and I can just be with her. When we as parents aren't able to cope with our own emotions, we can't cope with our child's emotions, and then we tend to not be okay to set the boundaries, to do the hard things, to allow them to cry if they need to cry for whatever reason. I'm angry. I want the blue cup. The blue cup's in the dishwasher. Yep, you're angry about that. I get it. It's not changing. That's okay, right?
Well, think about what a terrible situation you put yourself into as a mother. Not that it's on purpose. But if you're terrified of making your baby cry, and that's how they communicate, that's so stressful. And I used to, you know, I almost used to market to moms who didn't want crying involved, because I had these methods that you could use them on any temperament and it would be completely peaceful. Why not? Why not? You know, like, why would you want to have the crying if you can avoid it and it can be a peaceful, beautiful experience? But I think I didn't serve them in a way, because I was like, not addressing that part of, hey, if you're actually scared of crying, there's some work that probably needs to be done. And so I was really excited when I met Philippa, because I knew that there was a way for me and my students to figure out, like, is this someone who needs some work? Or is this just a mom who needs to learn a little bit about the normalcy of crying and that this is communication, and then be okay, right? So anyways, I'm super excited because now I have someone in my back pocket to send people to and to actually heal, and in such a beautiful way. But that's really common. I think because most of us have been raised with either trauma or just some tough stuff from, you know, our emotions being dismissed or shamed, that there's just, I guess, some unhealthy attitudes or myths out there that need to be dispelled.
Yeah, absolutely. Pippa, you've been very quiet. Have you got any questions?
I've really enjoyed just listening to this conversation. But one of the things I would love to ask you, Meredith, is for any woman or man even that's listening to this podcast that is pregnant or is on that journey, what little piece of advice would you have, Meredith? One of the things I'm picking up on is really getting to know your children and acknowledging their differences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, my mind always goes to the intuition thing. And I'm like, oh boy, am I repeating myself? No, these people haven't heard this before. That's probably the tip I give the most, is just stop focusing on the rules, stop focusing on getting it perfect, and just spend every moment, especially from the beginning, getting to know your child. And I think of parenthood as a dance. You're adjusting, you're moving, you're how to explain it? It's about being flexible. It's a beautiful rhythm that you're creating together as you get to know your child. And there's no book to tell you this kid is going to be this way, and there's no one out there that can predict anything. But you as a parent have a special gift, your intuition and your instincts. Nobody else except for the other parent has that gift, and your way is the right way. And the decisions you make most of the time, you know, when we're healthy and have great resources teaching us, you know, the best ways to raise our kiddo, most of the time you're doing exactly what they need. And so the shame or the concerns or the self-doubt is probably misplaced, probably from society and the messages you're hearing and reading, and maybe even your family, right? And so it's so important to focus on your inner voice and your child and just do what feels right. I think that saves people from so much, I don't know, suffering and confusion and self-doubt. Parenting is so hard. It's crazy.
and there's no rule book, is there? As you said, Meredith, it's all about your intuition and really forgiving ourselves as well, because grace. Life is not perfect. And I love what you're talking about, a dance, because life is a dance. It's all about not only having a life that we want, a life by design, but having our families the way that we want to have our families. Is it, Philippa, parenting by design? That's the,
something like
that. That's a really good name for a podcast.
Which is so cute. We're very happy with that.
I was going to say, before we start talking about that, if we're going to talk about that, absolutely, 100%. Like, if you were to raise your child someone else's way, you'd be miserable, pure and simple. And if you raise your child someone else's way, you may neglect them somehow, and you may not help your child thrive in some way, and that will feel terrible to you. And there's always parenting regret and parenting guilt, but that's not the type of regret or guilt that any of us want anyone to have, right? We don't want that regret of raising your child someone else's terms, someone else's way. You just don't want that.
And we know that families are all unique, and that comes into being when you're going to someone else's family for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now, it's the same holiday. It's the same cultural implication. And yet every family just has those tiny little differences, those tiny nuances of how they celebrate Christmas. And it's not only that, it's also the dynamic of the family. And every family is unique and every family is different. So why not just do it the way that you want to do it?
Yeah. I think one of the resources.
Go ahead.
I think one of those best resources that you have, and I'll put it in the show notes, is that temperament test. Really understanding your child for who they are. You know, when we don't have, so we talk about knowledge is power, but knowledge is only power if we can act on it, right? And that we use that knowledge. So when we understand our children for who and what they are and how they're programmed, it, and we've got language around that, and we've got tools around that, and we've got options around that, that's when it becomes really powerful. So, you know, until my children were diagnosed with autism, I didn't know why my child had to feel on the inside of every piece of clothing. She just did. So that's what we did. You know, she was the kind of kid who, if we were out late, she'd just curl up under my chair and go to sleep. But she also would fall asleep in the wrap still in the baby carrier at 3, right? Like, and I'd be carrying her younger sister around on the front, right? So she,
your poor back.
I'm fine. Anyway, I was balanced front and back. But anyway, they, you know, those, you know, each of my children is different. But until I had language around some of this stuff, you know, when I discovered that my children were autistic, all of a sudden I understood why sometimes they didn't want to be at family events, and they would say to me, "Mum, can we go now? We'd only been there an hour." Now I can say to them, "Do you want to come? Because I need to know, first of all, do they even have the social battery for being in that environment?" And they'll say to me, "Mum, my battery's low. I can't do that." Okay, no pressure. Tell me if you want to go or don't, or if I'm having something here. I don't expect them to come out. If their battery's low, I don't expect them to come out and associate with everyone. Now, prior to having language and understanding, I had an expectation that if we had guests, they would come out and be around them at least for a little.
The politeness, yeah.
Right? And now I don't even care. If they haven't got the battery, they haven't got the battery. Their mental health is more important. And so when we think about this in terms of babies and sleep, if we know what we're dealing with, if we understand the nuances that apply to that child because of their temperament, we actually open up a whole world of understanding that at 3 o'clock in the morning gives us the compassion to be able to say, "I know what's going on for you and I'm here," instead of, "Why won't you just go the fuck to sleep?" Right?
That's huge.
They made a book on that.
I had the most amazing, fulfilling experience when my brother had a second batch of children. That sounds so funny. But he had raised his kiddos. His youngest was like 18 or something, and he remarried, and his new wife had a baby. And, you know, he wasn't in his 20s anymore. He's in his 40s. And I shared my podcast and I shared some resources with him. And after 3 or 4 months, he had the best testimonial I've ever heard in my life. He was like, this was completely different for me. When my little ones or my older children were young, I always thought, why are you doing this to me? Why are you torturing me? Why won't you sleep? And now with this next baby or the recent baby, it was just knowing there was a need and knowing that they're waking up for the love and the closeness and being in those moments and actually enjoying them and actually feeling needed too was fulfilling for him. And I mean, obviously I was helping him as a sleep coach, but that part, you know, hearing how it changed his level of patience and compassion and being able to bond and connect and not be frustrated. So beautiful. Like, that's my favorite part of my work.
Yeah. And isn't that what being a parent is supposed to be about? Is being able to lean into those moments and enjoy the process instead of feeling like we're just surviving it.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm. Oh my gosh. We could talk forever, couldn't we?
Yeah. What did you say, Pippa?
Oh, so it just would be really nice. Really, really nice to be able to have a really incredible time as a parent and as a family.
I would go back. I would do that. Yeah.
So, you know, grandparenting isn't it?
Oh, and I love that part. And I love that the things that I've learned I get to teach my kids so that they can get it. I say right, but I just mean based on science and what we know, because we've come a long way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm going to put your podcast and some of your other stuff in the show notes. Folks, please reach out and find Meredith. She has some great tips and tools on her Instagram as well. She's constantly doing stuff on there. I am learning from her. So please feel free to reach out and ask questions. By the time this podcast hits, I should be finished my training in actual fact, so that'll be exciting. But yeah, Meredith does some great stuff on her Instagram and so on, so really look forward to sharing more of what you do, Meredith, and having this chat again.
Thank you
for joining us.
Yes, my pleasure. You are amazing ladies, so I feel very honored.
Well, thank you again. Yeah.
And
thank you
so much, and thank you, Philippa.
Bye for now.
Bye.